Hey, you. Yes, you guessed 10,542. Change your username. And while you're in a More Like Radio live page listening to fine quality programming, notice the banner ad just slightly above the chat room? It's a link to something you want in Amazon. Click it. It's probably reminding you to order something you need from Amazon.com. Don't leave MLR and type the URL like a sucker. Just click the link and it'll open in a new window. This way you can buy your shit and continue listening to the show. Now, change your username. It's right there on the right, stupid.
MoreLikeRadio.com, the new standard in internet radio. The Nerd Hour.
Tattoos and touchdowns.
Best selling show.
You're listening to the shoot.
Trust us, we're hot.
Masters of none.
360 on 420.
The Conti and Kenny Show.
It's Daytime Divas with Marianne and Kitty.
OSW Review.
Antisocial Gamer Radio.
Alcohol by volume.
This is Unsigned with J5.
It's time for Dutch and Royce.
No! Welcome to Rage Quit Radio.
Get ready for Hippo Juice.
Time for the Marco Radio.
Marco Radio.
The Elvis and Albert Show.
The Cousin Joe Show.
Radio Meltdown.
It's High Society Radio.
Brainstorm Radio.
It's all about me with Halls and Rorschach.
Daddy Wampus.
Orange Room.
Orange Room.
More Life Radio!
Hey, listeners, yes, that means you. Missed your favorite More Like Radio shows live? No problem. Just go to morelikeradio.com/downloads. That's morelikeradio.com/downloads. More Like Radio's RSS feed works with your iThings, Zooms, Androids, Windows Phone, and anything else that can subscribe to an RSS feed. If you're so awesome that you only get your podcasts from iTunes, you can subscribe to our feed in iTunes by clicking the Subscribe to iTunes link right on the Downloads page. So what are you waiting for? Download More Like Radio podcasts and subscribe to our feed now. Yes, right now. Do it.
Obviously, I was... Oh, never mind. I'm not going to explain it. But...
No, explain radio to Ashley.
Are you sitting comfortably? Then I'll begin. Would you mind taking Colin for a walk about 8?
Just 2,800 hours. Oh, yeah.
Now here's your host. That's Ashley, and this is...
Antisocial Gamer Radio.
Good evening, everyone. Hopefully you're all okay wherever it is you're listening to this. This is Antisocial Gamer Radio, live on morelikeradio.com. A whole shitload of gaming news this week. Some stuff I should have gone over last week, but literally, as you know, I always seem to run out of time because I talk and talk and talk. Good topic this week. Sort of, I'm being very nostalgic with the topics since I've come back. You know, I'm working on something for next week, which I'll sort of let you know in the future once I've got everything sorted. But you know, it's a good topic this week. It's about favorite locations in video games, like, you know, places you like sort of going, the way it looks, you know, the aesthetics, that sort of stuff, or, you know, memorable times spent there. You know, I've got a bunch of stories for several different things that I've liked, places that I've been to, that sort of stuff. But yeah, so I'll get into the usual how you can interact with the show. I say, if you want to email us, it's antisocialgamerradio@yahoo.co.uk. If you want to join our Facebook group, it's facebook.com/group/MLRGamerLobby. You can also like our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/antisocialgamerradio. And also, you can follow us on Twitter at MLRGamerRadio. I've played usual stuff this week, to be honest. A bit of Pokemon. I'm trying to breed myself a shiny Eevee so I can get myself a shiny Umbreon, which is basically sort of black fox type rabbit thing with like yellow circles, but the shiny one has blue circles, so you know, something I wanted for a while. I have been playing something new, which I will talk about. I literally played a bit yesterday and a bit today. We've got a new Trials game coming out for the Xbox One and the PlayStation 4, but I've been playing Trials Frontier, which is a lot of fun, but it's very, very laggy on my iPod, which basically means I need a new iPod. But to be honest, as my iPod is currently working, it's not broken or anything sort of faults like that, I will wait a while. But yeah, I mean, it probably just needs, a patch or something, but it does seem to be very laggy and slow when I play it. But yeah, Trials Frontier, it's a really good game. The gameplay is kind of slow, because I think probably because of my older iPod. But the music and that in the background is you know, normal. It's happening at the right speed it should be, and, you know, not slowing down or whatever compared to the gameplay. But as I say, yeah, it is a lot of fun. Basically, you start off the game, as usual, Trials, I say, for people who don't know, Trials is, it's basically you're on a bike and you've got to get from one side of the level to the other, and there's like, basically, it's hard to explain, because basically it's sort of like what, the old motocross type game we had back on the old Nintendo. I can't remember what the fuck it's called. But yeah, it's basically you're on a bike and you have to get, you know, one side to the other, as I said. But basically, you could do tricks and stuff like that to get to get across, and I think earn your points and stuff like that. I think this one does. But yeah, basically, it's just like a sort of obstacle course sort of thing. I mean, you've got to like various obstacles to get over that you have to use your bike. I mean, there's like be some logs in the road, and you have to sort of lean back with the bike and try and sort of hop over it. It's hard to explain, but it's your basic sort of bike challenge sort of thing. It's really, really fun. I say, I mean, I've got if anyone's got a Bike Baron, I have that on my iPod. It's basically the same as that. You sort of navigate levels, trying to dodge obstacles, and it's really, really fun. But I say this: it's like the first couple of levels they start you off with. It's like just, you know, they throw you straight into the game. You have to get from here to there, which you do. And then basically there's a cave-in, which I thought might have been my, making mistakes with the game. But it wasn't. It was part of the whole story. And basically you wake up after this cave-in at this town, and you're greeted by these people who want you to do certain things. It's basically you do things to open up more tracks, to race on, to get better scores, to get better ratings, to get money, and you can upgrade your bike, and, you know, it's very like that, sort of. It's a lot of fun. I mean, I do want to play it more, but I'll say as it's lagging, it's a bit, you know. I mean, there were several times I was doing a track today, and I had to sort of jump off this sort of cliff onto this, over this sort of ravine, onto this other wooden plank on the other side of this ravine. But because the bike, I sort of pushed one button and the bike slowed down instead of, you know, doing what I wanted it to do, and it sort of slowed down, so the bike sort of came to a halt and then just sort of crashed into this ravine. But it's a really, really good game. I mean, if you have got one of the latest iPhones or iPod touches, pick it up, because it's really, really good, and it's free, to be honest, which, you know, you can't argue with anything when it's free. But yeah, it's a lot of fun. I mean, I am a big fan of the Trails series. I mean, when I do get my PlayStation 4 next month, I will be picking up Trials Fusions when that comes out, because I can't wait. I mean, I've been watching The Ultimate Sidemen. I've been watching tons of their videos literally before the show started. They've got, they're sort of doing their last Trials Evolution runs, and they're you know, having fun with that. Really, really good to see those videos. I mean, I'm a big fan of The Ultimate Sidemen. But yeah, so watching some of them, having some fun, and, you know, I mean, I'm really shit at Trials, to be honest, but I mean, I do like watching their videos and, you know, messing around with the easy levels, because the medium and hard ones are a bit too tricky for me. I mean, the mediums are okay, but just, I don't know, the harder ones are a bit too challenging, to be honest. But no, what else have I been playing? What else? I did play a little bit of, was it the Pokemon Link Battle, Pokemon Trose? I'm not stopping playing that. I just haven't been bothered. I mean, I'm sort of probably over that phase where I want to play it, so it's probably one of those sort of toilet games. and sort of, you know, I'll just play it when I'm having a shit or whatever, or having a piss. But it's like, it is fun, and I have unlocked some more Pokemon, but I'm not, I don't know, the euphoria to play it has sort of weaned off me slightly, but it is fun. I mean, it's worth a pickup. I mean, it's, you know, it's about £7, I think, probably $8 or $9. It's worth picking up if you like Pokemon. It's good. It's pretty fun. What else? I am thinking about, since I started playing Final Fantasy X, I haven't bothered playing Dark Souls 2, but I do want to start picking it up again and get into it, because most of what I have been playing is Final Fantasy X. I am pretty much right at the end. I've literally got, I think, Sin to fight, and then I think the last two bosses, which is Braska's Aeon and Yuyevan, and I'm literally done with the game. But basically, I did try and fight Sin, but he just sort of beat the shit out of me. Because there's like a time limit where you have to, the final Sin fight, where he opens his mouth and then sort of blasts you with one of his most powerful attack, and it sort of ends the game. But because my characters weren't sort of high enough leveled, or, you know, better weapons or whatever it is, we lost. So I'm like sort of not back to the drawing board exactly. I'm sort of taking a break from that. I mean, before the show, about an hour ago, I was sitting here playing it and sort of doing the Chocobo training course so I could get the Cloudy Mirror. And then I went and upgraded that to the Celestial Mirror so I could start getting some of the ultimate weapons. And I'm going to do sort of Whacker's ultimate weapons first. I already did, because I've been playing Blitzball like crazy, I already won one of the tournaments, which let me get the Jupiter Sigil, which I have. And now I need to get all of his attack reels, his special overdrive moves. And then once I have that, I can... what is it? Yeah, once I have that, I can go back to where it is I need to and then upgrade his weapons so it is what it needs to be, which will be good. But, I mean, there's other people's... I mean, like Lulu's, you know, dodge lightning, was it 200 times in a row? I don't think I'm going to do that. I mean, even Tidus is one. It's like complete the Chocobo race in 0.0 seconds. And I'm like, yeah, I... don't think I'll do that either, because it is too hard, and I really can't. I mean, even when I was doing the Chocobo training, I was getting pissed off with the bloody thing, because it was like, well, I've got to beat this certain time, and it's like, well, this is a bit too fucking tricky for me. But I managed to do it to get what I need to. But I mean, I'll upgrade a few of the characters to ultimate weapons if I can. I mean, Yuna's I probably can do. I think Whacker, Yuna, and Riku I can do. I think Kimari I might be able to do. I don't know, because half these people I've looked up and sort of seen what their ultimate weapons are and what do I need to do, and some of them are okay. I mean, I do want to get some of the Aeons that I'm missing. I'm missing Ultima, but I have to go back through the Zenica Land temple again, which I'll need to do. And then once I've upgraded all these weapons, and, you know, I'm trying to find a decent place to level up and sort of get more points to unlock more spheres and just sort of, you know, try and complete the sphere grid, which is going to take a little bit of time. But I mean, I want to do that and beat the Dark Aeons. And, you know, there's other stuff. There's so much more I need to do. But I mean, there's some bits and pieces which I will sort of stop at, you know, getting most of the ultimate weapons. But I mean, trying to get all the final, get all the Aeons, I will try and do. But yeah, I say I am having a lot of fun with it. I am right near the end. I am looking forward to finish it, because it's good. I mean, it's brought back some of that nostalgia feeling, which is basically why I bought it, and I'm going to buy something else tomorrow, which I'll talk about in a sec. But it is really, really fun to play something like this again after not playing it for, like, you know, 10, 12 years. Has brought back a lot of memories, and it's fun to play. But I say it does make me think, though, because, I mean, there was a lot of stick about this game compared when Final Fantasy XIII came out. People were saying, well, you know, Final Fantasy XIII was linear. Final Fantasy X was pretty linear as well. But to be honest, though, with Final Fantasy X, the story is pretty much not non-existent. But I mean, the actual time spent with what you're trying to do is very non-existent. I mean, it's literally you go from. I mean, it is quite short how the story progresses. Like, you go from here to there to there to there. I mean, you're on very few roads when it comes to actually traveling, because you get to a certain end of wherever it is, like say, I don't know, the Mayan highway, whatever it is you're having to run along, and then it basically a map will pop up showing you going from this area to the next area, and it's like, well, you know, that was it basically. But I mean, now I have the airship, so I can go back to any place I want to. But I do want to basically, you know, try and do all the ultimate weapons, get what I can from them. Some of them are going to be pretty tricky. I might try some of them, but to be honest, it's a bit too tricky, and I just don't have the patience or care enough. I mean, actually, I beat this game once without having most of the ultimate weapons. I think I can do it again. But yeah, I mean, I do want to try bits and pieces, and then, I mean, if even after this, if I can be bothered, I might give Final Fantasy X-2 a go. I don't know. I mean, I did watch, what the hell was it? I did watch some of the cutscenes. They're not cutscenes. It was this sort of mini movie that stretched between Final Fantasy X and Final Fantasy X-2. I watched that. But yeah, I mean, you know, if I can be asked, I will. If not, whatever, I'll just sell it. I mean, I thought the Batman DLC, Cold Cold Heart DLC, was coming out tomorrow, but it's not. It's next week, so I'm about a week away. I mean, I need to pre-order that, so I basically next Tuesday, I think it is. Yeah, one sec. Double check. No, sorry, next Wednesday the DLC comes out. Basically, I can sort of just turn on my PlayStation and it downloads straight away, and then 6 hours later, after it's finished downloading onto my PlayStation, I can play it. But yeah, I am looking forward to picking that up when it does come. It gives me a chance to play Batman again, and once I've done that, I can sell Batman. And, you know, just sort of, I mean, because there's games I want, which is basically what I mentioned a few minutes ago. I mean, I do want to pick up, because I'd say I've been watching YouTube a lot. I mean, I've subscribed to the Major League Baseball thing, because they put, I think, one a day, they'll put up a game, and I was like, oh, great, I can sit here for a couple of hours and, you know, shiny breed my Pokemon and just watch baseball all the time. But yeah, I mean, I say I have been watching videos of like walkthroughs and stuff, mainly due to this topic, which we'll talk about in a few seconds. But I'm watching this walkthrough by this guy called Tetra Ninja, and like he's doing a walkthrough on Metal Gear Solid 4. And I'm like, I really want to play Metal Gear Solid 4 again. And, you know, I think I'll try and, you know, when I do some shopping tomorrow, I'll head down to the shops and try and find myself a copy, which, to be honest, it should be pretty simple. Just head to any, you know, pre-owned section of game or wherever it is I can find it. And I should be able to pick it up pretty cheap, considering it's about a six-year-old game. But yeah, I mean, I'm looking forward to picking it up. It's a great game. And just, it's one of those things. I mean, I tweeted to David Hayter. I said, you know, it'd be nice to play a Metal Gear Solid game where we could play as Solid Snake and you were voicing him. But I mean, to be honest, that does worry me. I mean, I'm a big fan of the Metal Gear Solid series. I mean, Metal Gear Solid, the original one on the PlayStation, is probably one of my favourite games of all time. But yeah, it's just, I want to play, you know. I mean, the way, you know, Metal Gear Solid 4 ended with, you know, Old Man Snake basically got a year to live. Unless they do something like clone him again, but to be honest, I think that might end up with something like with Multiplicity. But yeah, I mean, I want to play a Metal Gear Solid game where you can play as Solid Snake, like sort of a modern Metal Gear Solid. I mean, I'm looking forward to playing Phantom Pain. I intend to pick up Ground Zeroes once I've sold basically what I'm playing now. But yeah, I mean, I am interested in playing like the newer stuff. I mean, I've got about 4 or 5 weeks until I get my PlayStation 4 with Watch Dogs, and then I've got like Trials Fusions. I am also thinking about picking up Final Fantasy 14 as well, like getting into that for a little bit and seeing how that does. But you know, I don't know. So, I mean, it's one of those things. I mean, I'm sort of getting very nostalgic at the moment with, you know, the topics that I'm doing. And, like, you know, because it's sort of, you know, not the end of an era as such, but it's like there's not going to be many games I will be playing on my Xbox 360 or my PlayStation 3, because I will have a PlayStation 4, which I'll be playing most of the stuff. I mean, you know, Destiny, Watch Dogs, you know, just a whole bunch of stuff that's I'm really looking forward to playing when it does eventually come out. And the fact that we also got E3 in June, it's about 2 months away. I mean, I mean, one of the things I'm looking forward to picking up is probably Borderlands, the pre-sequel, which I think I have a news article on that about as well. I mean, that's not coming out on the Xbox on the Xbox One or the PlayStation 4, but it will be mainly last console stuff. I did tweet to Gearbox Studios, and I said, you know, is the reason that we're not getting the next Borderlands 3. Because you don't know where to take the story, and that got retweeted by Reddit's the Borderlands subreddit on the Reddit's official Twitter, which was great. And but yeah, I mean, to us, I want a new Borderlands, which we're going to get. I mean, there's like new characters which I've seen, and it looks really interesting. But I'm like, well, the next one, I don't know. I mean, they're working on this pre-sequel thing, and I don't know. I'll talk about it more in the news, but I say let's trying to get onto this week's topic, which is basically favorite locations in games. And you know, I mean, I've been playing games for years, and I'm bound to have several here. And I mean, I had a whole list. I've got most of what I remembered to put down on the list. But I, as usual, I asked this into the Facebook group, which all of you should be members of by now. And I got a few answers. I got, you know, from John from the Hippo Juice. He said the Snot Sewers in the Adventures of Boogerman. I never played that. I mean, just to say, I'm saying, you know, I mean, regular listeners will know what I'm talking about. When it comes to this sort of stuff, it's like, you know, I never had the Nintendos or, you know, that sort of stuff. I mean, I started off with a Game Gear and then a Mega Drive. And, you know, so basically all these good games that people have fond memories of, I basically didn't play, you know. But yeah, he says the Snot Sewers in Adventures of Boogerman. And Matty Matt, he says, from 16-bit Hero, he says, Strider, the wilderness on the second level. I mean, it sounds. I mean, the new Strider, I think it's out at the moment, which I need to pick up as well. So much stuff I need to pick up before basically I sort of transition to the new current gen systems. But yeah, he says that, and he also says it totally pushed the envelope and was the first time I ever appreciated graphics in a game. And also modern era, he's talking about the High Country. Fallout New Vegas, which I'm trying to remember where the hell that was. But yeah, I mean, Fallout New Vegas wasn't the best thing. I mean, to be honest, the strip was quite nice, the whole actual New Vegas itself. But I mean, the graphics are so dated even for that. And then we got Brian, he says, the intestine level in Earthworm Jim. I mean, because they put Earthworm Jim out on a. What the hell was it? It came out as. Xbox Live Arcade and PlayStation Network arcade game, like, you know, a sort of not redo, but it was, you know, they brought it back and HD'd it and whatever. But yeah, I tried to get into it. I don't know, it's one of those games that everyone likes. It's, you know, it's like Beyond Good and Evil. People love that game. I mean, we're getting a sequel. It's like, I tried to play it. I got most of the way through it, I think. But it's like, this isn't interesting. This is just boring. It just wasn't doing what I wanted it to do for me. But yeah, Earthworm Jim's one of them as well. You know, Brian likes it. You know, whatever. And also John, he comments as well. He says, Toe Jam and Earl panic on Funky Town. The whole game, he says. So, you know. I mean, that's the thing as well. Toe Jam and Earl for the Mega Drive, Genesis. I never played that either. It was one of those ones, it was like, well... I don't know, because I mean, when it came to the gaming of my early days, it was basically nag my parents to buy me these games, and to be honest, what other stuff I didn't have to, couldn't get them to buy, I had to pay for myself, and you know, at that time it was pretty much limited on what you could buy. I mean, to be honest, there was no internet, there was no Amazon. It's like, well, you bought whatever you saw in the shop, and considering the age I started playing the Mega Drive and stuff when the PlayStation was coming out. I was very limited to anything decent, basically the usual shitty tennis games or whatever it was. I mean, you know, I remember all my friends sort of having, you know, back when they had the Genesis and the Mega Drive, it was like, you know, playing the Desert Strike stuff, the, you know, Urban Strike. I was like, wow, I'd love to play these games. And could I find them? Could I? Fuck no. It was literally sort of stuck with playing, what the hell was it? Some shitty tennis game, which I think I threw out the window because it was so shit. oh, excuse me. But yeah, it's like trying to find stuff to play. It was a bit bit tricky. Oh, excuse me. Sorry. But yeah, I mean, I'll go over some of my favourite memories. I mean, a lot of this stuff is pretty much similar. I mean, I've got some, I got stuff going across all genres. I've got, you know, open world and first person shooters, that sort of stuff. I mean, like, you know, Mass Effect, the Citadel. I mean, there wasn't much to it in the first Mass Effect. I'm talking about the whole Mass Effect series here, but I mean, as the game went on, we got, you know, Mass Effect 2 and Mass Effect 3. Yeah, Mass Effect 3. The sort of Citadel opened up. We got to the nightclubs. I also thought about Omega as well from, I think that was Mass Effect 2. No, Mass Effect 3, I think. But yeah, I mean, there's just so much going on in the Citadel. You know, all the clubs and the shops. And, you know, I mean, the shops opened up totally in the second one. You know, it's just sort of one of those things. It's that's what I liked about the whole sort of role play games. And I mean, I talk about other I talk about Final Fantasy VII in a second, but other places that you could get to, you know, you knew the places were out that you couldn't get to because basically they weren't in the game. But I mean, you know, the Citadel Mass Effect was really, really enjoyable. What else we got? Oh yeah, from Spider-Man 2, the movie game. New York, the whole city itself. I mean, I really did like what they did with it. I mean, the first Spider-Man movie game. I mean, you know, I have played other Spider-Man games where you have gone through like the whole sort of city of New York, but I mean, there was just so much life in the Spider-Man 2 game. It just sort of, you know, all the sort of different challenges and stuff, and it was just like the whole city was, you know, it was living and breathing. It's like This what must be what it's like to be in New York until I actually went to it, but yeah, I mean, it was a really good game, and tons of great locations, and you know, had so much fun sort of web slinging. It was just a really good place to sort of to be. What else we got? Oh, here we go. Yeah, Metal Gear Solid, the first, you know, place on the PlayStation, the helipad area, the main bit where you you know, you start the game after you've because I think I was talking about this last week, after you go into the lift after taking out the guards, and you go straight up to the main thing where the hindy is, that sort of area. I like that. It was like, you know, the start of the challenge the whole excuse me, the start of the whole area, you know, where your great undertaking was about to begin. It's like, you know, I mean, just what I like about the Kojima games when it comes to Metal Gear Solid, it's like there's so much depth and emphasis in what he does and what he creates. It's, you know, I mean, well, it's not shown off by cutscenes. It does a lot for me when it comes to this whole thing. I mean, I'm a big fan of the multiple choice way to do things, sneaking and stealth, and that's, you know, I love those sort of games. One sec. But yeah, I say also the snowy area, basically where you fight Vulcan Raven after leaving the main building, that was pretty good as well, because it was sort of, you know, you start off outside and you're trying to deal with these guards, trying to sneak yourself into the building, and then when you get in and do your bits and pieces, like you find Decoy Octopus, and then basically you actually leave the building for the first time to go back out. It's like, yeah, you've been in a sort of a semi-safe comfort zone of, like, you know, a warm building, semi-warm. I mean, everyone was wearing sort of ski jackets in there anyway. But then you go outside, you're basically being thrown into the frozen tundra of the wilderness. But, well, then basically a giant tank appears with a giant man inside who tries to kill you. That was a really great boss fight. But yeah, so, you know, that's pretty much on the Metal Gear Solid stuff. But, I mean, other places I saw about Final Fantasy VII, the Golden Circle, you know, one of my favourite locations because, you know, of all the fun and activities, the snowballing, the ghost train bit where you could shoot stuff and win prizes. I mean, it's just a really fun place to be, and, you know, where the story was as well. It was just really, really good. I mean, it's like, you know, I have a lot of nostalgia for Final Fantasy VII. I say Metal Gear Solid and Final Fantasy VII are probably one of my two favourite games of all time. You know, if, you know, people knock, I mean, so I'll bring up Limit Break Radio. They did a whole thing about Final Fantasy games, like your favourite Final Fantasy games. They sort of went through like through 1 to, I think, back when I think we were up to 12, I think, was when they stopped. But yeah, they were talking about, you know, people, some people don't like 7. People like, you know, but people like 7 because it's, they said, same way I like it, people like it because it's their first one. And that was the same for me. That was my first one, and there was so much you could do, and, you know. I mean, other places I liked in Final Fantasy VII was the train yard, which is basically, just trying to think, after you, I think it wasn't after you blew up, I don't think it was after you blew up the generator. I think it was after you have to rescue Aerith from that Don guy. And then you end up in the train yard trying to get your way back to, was it Sector 7? I think it was. 7th Heaven, I think that was the Tifa's bar. But yeah, I mean, the train yard was, it was quite nice. It was, I say, it's my sort of, my view with Mass Effect with the Citadel. I mean, literally, I mean, this place was like full of train, like rusty trains and, you know, not in service, that sort of stuff. And you had to sort of move them to get to certain places to get over across the whole train yard. But I liked it because it was like, well, this is part of the city. This is part of what's there. It's the living, breathing hub where, you know, like with the Citadel. It's like, well, yeah. And the fact that part of the game, you actually, you know, ride around on these trains. And it's like, well, these are the trains that you've been riding around on. And it's just so desolate. It was just not creepy as such, but it was just so dark and dank. And it was just... It just had a lot, it just, you know, it made me feel like there was a lot of, you know, energy and presence around it, to be honest. But yeah, I say I did. And the fact that I think I spent like about a couple of hours in the train yard sort of stealing, I think, ghost hands or what it was from the ghosts there. Because I think the item you could use in battle, and it would let you steal was it a whole bunch of MP from your enemies. But yeah, I mean, you know, that was a lot of fun, and you know, one of my favorite locations in that. But I say, I'll talk about some Call of Duty stuff here. I say some of the maps. I mean, Call of Duty 4. I mean, to be honest, that has been my best multiplayer experience. I mean, I had a lot of fun with it. There's some really good maps, and to be honest, which is why we get some of the maps sort of recreated for Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2 from Call of Duty 4. But yeah, one of my favourite ones was Crashdown. I mean, I like that. It was the one with the big helicopter in the middle. And, you know, a lot of fun with that. I mean, it was the one, I think, with the PC version. They did, like, a Christmas theme for it many years ago when it was when this first came out. But yeah, I mean, there are so many decent maps in Call of Duty 4. I mean, I miss playing it. I was watching footage of someone playing one of the other levels on it. And, you know, it's just such a good game with how the map design was and, you know, I'm looking forward to playing. You know, I mean, I'm itching for a new first-person shooter to play, but I mean, everything's so complex these days, and it's like I just remember the good old days of playing, you know, Call of Duty 4. I mean, if there are people still online, I might just pick myself up a copy tomorrow and, you know, give it a go and play it through again just for the multiplayer. But I mean, yeah, Crashdown was a good. It was sort of the Hollywood stylized level, the sort of. I was going to say Saving Private Ryan, but it's not. It's Black Hawk Down. But yeah, that sort of, you know, the helicopter's in the middle, and there's several ways of getting across the map. And then I just sort of loved hiding out in the helicopter for a little bit before, you know, I was shot. But yeah, you know, it's just a really good level. I mean, you know, Call of Duty 4 had tons of really good maps that were, you know, that were really, really good. But I'll say Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2, the Terminal, which was, you know, redone for Modern Warfare 3. Yeah, Terminal. I mean, that's the thing. I'm a big, you know, I like traveling. I mean, you know, sort of talking to the family, sort of, you know, going to America in a few months for the next live event. I've got, you know, I'm going to Manchester in a couple of weeks for the Pokemon National Tournament. I'm looking forward to that. I mean, I sit down and watch Michael Palin's Around the World in 80 Days like several times a year because I want to travel more, but, you know. I'm sort of stuck here, to be honest. But yeah, I mean, the whole airport thing really, you know, really does it for me. It's just like a nice place. It, you know, compared to the fact that the actual mission in the game where you're in the terminal, you're basically killing everyone on site. But, you know, that's beside the point. But no, I did like the whole map and the location. You know, it's a sunny day, you know, taking off from this airport. You know, but plus, I mean, the fact that so many different places. I mean, I was watching, I think it was Mojo Jojo, their top 10 list, and they sort of did like a top 10 Call of Duty maps. I mean, this video's in the Facebook group as well, so get yourself in there and have a watch, or, you know, look it up on YouTube. It's really, really good. And this was on their level, and so it was Crash Down, a bunch of others. But yeah, I mean, it was just it was surprising, though, sort of watching that video. And I think there was like one level from Call of Duty Ghosts. That's about it. But I mean, there was more maps from the Infinity Ward, Sledgehammer era games than there was anyone else. It was, you know, there was tons from Call of Duty 4, several from Modern Warfare 2, and literally I think one from World at War, which was, I can't remember what it was. It was one of the ones I did like playing when the little time I actually did spend playing World at War. And, you know, there's been so many Call of Duty games, it's just been a pain. But no, I mean, you know, that sort of stuff, that was, I really liked that. Well, another one just basically covers all things space, mainly in games like Dark Star 1, which was a PC game which we got on the Xbox 360. I don't know if it came out on the PlayStation 3, but it basically was your basic space adventure. And this is the same for space as this category. Galaxy on Fire 2. I mean, I didn't really play much on Galaxy on Fire, but I mean, Galaxy on Fire 2, I mean, I finished that game, and I think I played some of the DLC. But yeah, I mean, I just like the whole open space feel. I mean, you know, I'm a big fan of sort of space flight shooters, and this one, we had it. It was like, you know, you've been at the space station and you were just sort of leaving. You know, you're sort of leaving. I mean, that's the thing. It's like other stuff. Mace Griffin Bounty Hunter. There wasn't much space stuff. I mean, I didn't play too much. But, I mean, I did like the central hub where you were. You went back into your missions and that sort of stuff. But, I mean, yeah, the whole space area where you were sort of, you know, just sort of floating around in space with Dark Star 1 and Galaxy and Fight. It's like, you know, there was other ships. There was other pirates. You know, just there was life out amongst the darkness, and it was just really, really good. Here we go. Yeah, Bar Oasis. You know, the iOS game. You know, iPod Touch, iPhone. You know, the bar, the actual bar itself. You know, that was, you know, one of the main you know, places to be for the whole game, because basically you couldn't go anywhere else. But I mean, it was. The bar was a great place. I mean, it really sucked me in when I was playing the game. It was like, I sort of want to be here. I want to sort of spend all my time here. I want to interact with the people. And, you know, it was just a really good place. I mean, you know, as well as on the back wall, if anyone's got this, from 1 and 2, you got, in the second one, you got sort of screenshots from the first game, like pictures of people that weren't on the back wall for the first one, but they were placed on the second one, in the second one. And I thought that was a nice touch, sort of like memories from the previous game now in this second one. And hopefully, I mean, it's been a couple of years since we got the last Bar Oasis. I'm hoping we're going to get a new Bar Oasis sometime, maybe this year or next year. But, I want a new one to continue on the story. And I'll be really looking forward to it when we do get it. Hitman Absolution, the library. I mean, this was the whole main 10-minute demo that we did get before the game came out, where it was basically Agent 47 was on the run in Chicago, you know, running through the library, and he was going up through the library into the hippie's house. And, you know, I just liked that location. It was. I mean, it's probably because I sort of, you know, watched the demo and I was like, wow, this looks really good and I can't wait to play it. And then we did get to play it and I had so much fun, and it was just sort of, you know, sneak your way around the library, which, trust me, was a lot more harder than it was in the demo. Trying to not get seen by people. It was really, really fun. But yeah, sort of the whole level in general was pretty much the best. That was sort of what I was looking forward to when I first started playing the game. I mean, I know I was on several different forums, like chatting with people saying, well, when do we get access to this bit that we saw in the demo? And it's like, well, I had to wait till like halfway through the game. And it was like, well, great, I've got to get through this bits and pieces, sort of just do levels to kill everyone and get through where I needed. But yeah, I mean, it was a totally fun level, and it was really, really good. And, you know, that's why I say, as Hitman Absolution, really, really good game. And I don't think a lot of people bought it. I mean, I did because I'm a big fan of the series, but it's worth picking up. I mean, it's the Xbox Live arcade game for the next couple of days. And basically, we need to buy it now before it runs out. But yeah, I mean, it's a really good game and it's worth picking up and people need to pick it up. What else have I got on my list? Let's have a look. Metal Gear Solid 4. I talked about, you know, the original one. And I'll say I'm very nostalgic about Metal Gear Solid 4, having watching Tetra Ninja's videos. The Middle East, the first level you come to. I mean, this was... as I say, it's weird how the whole game set out. I mean, I'm watching Tetra Ninja and he's talking about using the Octo Camo and that sort of stuff. But it's like... I bought the guide when I was the first time I went to America. I was out in, I think it was the Florida Mall, and just sort of sitting there outside one of the shops, having just bought the guide for whatever it was dollars that I bought it for back in the day. And I was like looking at the level, and I was like, wow, the whole Middle East bit's a whole big level, and then you got like certain other levels, like I think it was like Germany you go to, and it was like just very short ones. But this actually took advantage of what you could do in the game, and it was really, really fun. But, I mean, yeah, the Shadow of Moses bit. I mean, I am so looking forward to picking up Metal Gear Solid 4 again. But, yeah, I mean, the whole Middle East, you could actually wander around the level, do bits and pieces. There was no real focus apart from get from here to there. But, I mean, that's the thing with Metal Gear Solid 4, the whole game in general, is like there's so much emphasis on what you can do in the game, but you didn't really need to do any of it. I mean, I was looking at the weapons you can unlock by doing certain things or getting certain... so much money or something. I can't remember what it was you needed to get, but it's like you could unlock like the solar gun or something for like a shit ton of money. But yeah, I mean, it's so much stuff that you could put into a game, and they did. And to be honest, at the end of the day, you didn't really need any of it. To be honest, all you need was probably your tranquilizer gun and a silenced pistol, and that was it. What else have I got on my list? Oh, here we go. Yeah, the Sunny Beach level from Wave Race 64. Now, me and my sister used to play this all the time back before we went on holidays, back in the day, 15 years ago, roughly. And it was just like a really fun level because it was, the sun was shining, it was tropical location, and, Wave Race is a really fun game. But yeah, I mean, the Sunny Beach level was pretty fun. It was literally the easiest level. It was like the first level. And it sort of threw you into the game. It's like, yeah, have some fun. Where you'd normally expect to see sort of jet skis, whizzing about. And, it was really, really good. I sort of wish I'd, because I've sold my copy of Grand Theft Auto, what was it, 5? Yeah. I didn't really do too much on the jet ski, but, some of the races and stuff, I sort of watch with the Ultimate Sidemen and they're having fun, but... I am looking forward to the next Grand Theft Auto when it does come out on the 360. PlayStation 1 and the Xbox. Xbox One and PlayStation 4. Sometime 5-6 years from now, maybe. What else have I got on my list? Let's have a look. Oh, here we go. Yeah, Final Fantasy 11. Port by stock. This is one of the main starting points of the game. I mean, I did like it because it was like it was the way it changed from like day to night. There was like houses and there were shops. And it was like, it was basically a port, and it was where the airship was that took off, and there's a bridge there that opened up to let the airship through. I mean, it was quite funny watching the, all the different people milling around and doing bits and pieces. I mean, there was a dragoon there in sort of purple armor, whatever, I think it was like the relic armor at the time. Sort of just, the guy in his dragoon armor was sort of standing there, It was just a lot of fun with how it was, and everyone was interacting with each other. But yeah, it just was a sort of nice place to be, and compared to the main part of the city of Bastok, which was very stone and quarry and dead basically. There wasn't much to it. But I mean that the Port Bastok I actually quite like. It was a really, really a decent place. But yeah, I'm just trying to think about others. I mean, I think I've nearly gone through my list. But so, I'll go back to Mace Griffin Bounty Hunter. I mean, I did like that whole game was so good, but it wasn't, I don't know, I don't think it was on a lot of people's radar, to be honest. I mean, it was a first-person shooter set in space, and you jump on your spaceship and go from level to level to level. But I mean, I did like the whole spaceship itself was, you know, probably one of my favourite locations, because it was sort of what like we got with Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic. You know, we had, you know, you had your ship, and you could do bits and pieces on it, and there was secrets that you can unlock through this ship, and it was, you know, it was just so much fun. But, you know, it's one of those things. But no, I say other areas I think about, you know, I'm a big fan of sort of water, as you know, you've heard me talk about Morrowind with the water in that. But I'm a big fan of the sort of waterfalls and water areas and, you know, the vegetation, that sort of stuff. I mean, you know, Oblivion, Far Cry 3, you know, some really good, I mean, one of the waterfall in Far Cry 3 where basically you sneak out of and you kill a guy, which was really good. But yeah, I mean, Oblivion had some good sort of water areas. So did Skyrim. I can't remember, was it Whiterun? I don't think it was Whiterun. It might have been Whiterun. Basically, where there was a whole mountain—not a mountain, but it was like a sort of a big hill—and there was water running all over the place. And you know, there's so many different decent locations. Even sort of, I think Riverwood. You sort of by the foot of the mountain. It's like that sort of area there. It was tons of, you know, water and vegetation. I mean, it's a very beautiful game. I mean, I've seen screenshots rather of actual characters and people within, was it 1080p? There's been some mods that have been popping up that have made the graphics even better. But yeah, I mean, it's a really fun looking game. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, so many good places to play. I mean, this is what makes me excited for the next, you know, this current console generation of what we're getting, what we're seeing. You know, what are we going to see in the next Skyrim game, you know, the next Elder Scrolls game that's not online, or the next Final Fantasy, the next, you know, Grand Theft Auto? You know, so many possibilities of what we're going to get that's coming in the future, you know, to make us marvel. I mean, I think about other locations like, the first Gears of War game, the whole, when you start out, just after Marcus gets out of prison, you're basically amongst the cityscape, and it's like, you know, desolate buildings. But I mean, I liked how it was drawn. I mean, you know, playing this on a big screen TV, but you know, when it first came out many, many years ago, it was like, well, how good it looks amongst whatever the image 780, you know, whatever that image ratio is. But you know, that was really good. I did have one just in my head a second ago. I completely forgot about it. Excuse me. But yeah, I mean, there's so many different locations. Halo 3. No, was it Halo 3? No. Was it Halo? I think it was Halo. Oh, crap. What was the one we just got? You weren't playing as Master Chief. It was, you played as someone else. Halo Reach. Yes. It was quite nice, a location, because it was literally, there was a big, great big boss fight. But you were in the nightclub and you were fighting. I'm not the biggest Halo fan, but I mean they had like rocket launchers and they were very fucking tough. But yeah, there was like a whole nightclub battle that you were fighting. I know people listening to this are sort of shouting the answers at me. But yeah, I mean, it was a really good fight and location. The music was quite nice. It was really, really good. It was, you know, tons of fun had in this location. It was really, really good. But yeah, I just think about other stuff. It's like, you know, I'm sort of looking at my baseball game. You know, there were some great stadiums, as there are, you know, in, you know, real life, as they were put into the game. I mean, as you noticed, I probably haven't said anything Pokemon related in locations, because to us, there has been no real location in Pokemon that I've actually liked, because you basically sort of, with those games, you sort of go from here to there, and you do what you need to level up your Pokemon to a certain level, and you just move on. I mean, there's been nothing that's... I hear people talk about the music a lot, and I'm like, well, I turn the sound off because I don't want to piss anyone off when I'm on the train. But yeah, I mean, there's tons of decent locations, probably, but I just sort of... I don't really know any offhand, and considering the fact that X and Y is the first 3D proper 3D Pokemon game we've got, and how it looks pretty and nice, it's like, well, there's not really much I can choose from, to be honest. But yeah, so that pretty much wraps up this topic. I'm going to take a quick break in a few seconds. But yeah, I mean, I am looking forward to what do you call it? What we are going to be getting with this, you know, this console generation that we have, that we are in now. What games are we going to see that we don't know about? You know, what games? You know, the new Call of Duty. What's that going to offer us? You know, what maps are we going to like? You know. We'll see how it goes. But, I mean, obviously, it does make me wonder because, I mean, I think this year we're supposed to get... I don't know. There's so many Call of Duty games, I lost track of who's making who this year. I was just trying to think about Assassin's Creed as well. I mean, other locations in that. Probably some of the secret temples, the big sort of cavernous places. I think it was in Assassin's Creed Brotherhood. I think it was like one of the final sort of cathedrals. You were basically up in the rafters and you had to sort of make your way around the edge of the temple. That was pretty fun. That was a really nice location. But yeah, there's not been too many, to be honest. But no. All right, I'm going to take a quick break because I need to refresh my drink. And I need a rest. But I'll be back in about 10 minutes or so. So go get yourself something to eat or stay here and listen to these breaks. But I'll be back with the second hour of Antisocial Game Radio live on morelightradio.com after these messages.
And Ashley, you're from England, so we're not really sure what asshole number you would be. We just know it would be at least two extra numbers and one extra dash.
Yeah,
that's all we know
sign.
For sure. Yeah. It's a sort of country code.
Ladies and gentlemen, we invite you to have a go.
If you'd like to Skype in, it's Antisocial Gamer Radio. All one word.
MorelikeRadio.com, the new standard in internet radio.
Now I'm realizing that this is all going to be on fucking podcast. Oh, boy.
I told you. I was trying to warn you the whole time.
Dude, I don't care. I'm voluntarily Skyping into you. Use this to make a promo. I don't care. No. Mm-hmm. Dude, like I said, my fiance doesn't listen. Dutch got drunk one night. Well, he gets drunk every night. But he got drunk one night, and I used it as a promo. Why not? Use this into a promo. I give everyone permission to turn this audio into a promo. I don't care.
He also used drunk me for a promo, too, if you remember.
Punch AJ, you play it every week.
I do. Folks at home, Radio Gold like this happens every Sunday and Thursday at midnight on 360 on 420, only on morelikeradio.com.
Hey smokers, you stink worse than a dumpster. Stop living in the Middle Ages and try an electronic cigarette today by Smokeless Image. Just go to tinyurl.com/MLRsmoke. They're cheaper than regular cigarettes, don't smell, and come in a variety of flavors like fruit, mint, and traditional tobacco flavors. Order your new electronic cigarettes from Smokeless Image today by going to tinyurl.com/MLRsmoke. That's tinyurl.com/MLRsmoke.
If you're sick and tired of getting pro wrestling only after it's gone through the PG filter, then it's time you were introduced to Combat Zone Wrestling. Celebrating 15 years of ultra-violence, Combat Zone Wrestling will give you all the high-stakes, high-flying, and hard-hitting pro wrestling you can handle. Check out their live event schedule, get information on their next iPay-per-view, skim the roster, or shop for CZW merch right now at czwrestling.com. That's czwrestling.com. No dance segments, no endless talk of downloading apps, just wrestling. Combat Zone Wrestling, the ultra-violent underground.
Talk Radio Meltdown.
He just wrote a song, put it on an album. The album came out, went to number one, and a few weeks later, he's like, oh, yeah, by the way, I'm gay, and if you want to know why, listen to this particular track.
Oh,
so everyone did, and they found out. It's like, oh, the song's apparently about how much he wants to fuck a dude. Okay. That's logical.
Well, with the verse like, I want a dick up my ass repeatedly with balls touching my bum.
Is that really the lyric? I'm not familiar with this band.
Talk Radio Meltdown every Friday from 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern on morelikeradio.com.
What kind of store only has one thing on the shelf? T-Fury does. Now before you complain, listen to how it works. Each day a brand new t-shirt design becomes available for only 24 hours, then it's replaced by a new design the following day. They're all submitted by freelance artists too, so they're completely unique. They come in multiple colors and sizes, and they're all inspired by nerd and geek culture. And for only $11 per shirt, you can't go wrong. Check out today's limited edition design right now at tinyurl.com/MLRTs. Bookmark it and check back daily for new designs at tinyurl.com/MLRTEES.
Fellas, are you looking to spice things up in the bedroom? Been fantasizing about surprising your lover with an adventurous new toy or adult movie? Well, here's an offer you won't be able to resist. Go to adamandeve.com, and for a limited time only, you'll get 50% off just about any item. But that's not all. Oh, no. When you select your one item at 50% off, you'll also receive 3 free adult DVDs for a little inspiration. Plus, a free extra gift so sensual, we can't mention it on the radio. And to top it all off, we'll even throw in free shipping on your entire order. And no, we're not teasing. So check out adamandeve.com today for this special offer. Get 50% off one item when you type DEAL48 for the offer code upon checkout. When you do, you'll get 3 free DVDs, a free extra gift, and free shipping. Just use offer code DEAL48 at adamandeve.com.
If you weren't able to catch the last Hippo Juice show, here's what you probably missed.
The credibility that they are using as a bouncer at a Colombian strip club. Credibility.
Oh my God, that's hilarious. Let's say it 3 more times.
Oh, God, to save you, gotta save my soul. Wow, down, bow, down, wow, dilly, wow, down, wow.
Listen to the Hippo Juice Show live every Wednesday night, 7 to 9 p.m. on morelikeradio.com.
Tonight at 10, it's a tale of lust, seduction, and murder on Sexy Betrayals. Then at 7, some like their murder with a side of sexy biscuits on Southern Fried Homicide. But now, get ready for lust, betrayal, and murder on Hot Load Case Files.
Oh, yeah. 3 of the best shows in a row.
Is the lube over there?
Yeah, I got lube right here.
Well, get over here, big guy.
Yeah. What the hell? Yeah, hi. We aren't getting our informative murder porn. No, none of our channels that have informative murder porn appear to be working. Yeah, the screen just says, how do you tame a horse in Minecraft? Yes, we do have children. A what? A parental lock? Stan! How do you tame a horse in Minecraft?
What?
What is Minecraft and how do you tame a horse in it?
You guys don't need to be watching that stuff.
Oh, come on! You can't block your parents from watching informative murder porn! What, you think if we watch shows about married people killing each other all the time, we're gonna go out and do it? That's stupid! I'm not gonna go out and kill your mom just because I watch Investigative Discovery, Stan. It'd be impossible to clear away all the DNA evidence anyway. Even if I hired someone else to kill her, I'd have to kill that person too, because 96% of the time, that person eventually tells the truth. I've thought this through a lot. Stan, you're a lousy kid. I wish Jaden Smith was my son.
And welcome back to the second hour of Antisocial Gamer Radio, live on morelikeradio.com. As I talked about before the break, Borderlands 2, the pre-sequel. I have an article here I got from Games Radar. This came out about a week or so ago. Borderlands, the pre-sequel, may not need next-gen, but next-gen needs it. Gearbox's next game is Borderlands, the pre-sequel, a first-person shooter set on the moon of Pandora and nestled between the events of the first and second game. But despite coming out in the second half of 2014, a year or so after the launch of next-gen consoles, it's to remain an exclusively last-gen affair. To be honest, that was the same with God of War. That was pretty much that came out when PlayStation 3 was thriving. Well, started to thrive. But yeah, I say, where was I? Yeah, according to Gearbox CEO, Randy Pitchford, next gen simply hasn't reached a point where there are enough consoles out there to justify it. And while it's while he's technically correct, that doesn't keep the pre-sequel off next gen. It's actually the right call. During the reveal event for the pre-sequel, he explained that there are fewer Xbox Ones and PlayStation 4s that we sell copies of Borderlands 2. I imagine over time, you know, maybe by the time we need to get we get to the third or fourth Christmas, there will be enough of an install base. I can agree. You know, it's one of those things I can agree to disagree. I mean, I agree what he's saying. It makes perfect sense, you know, to be honest. I mean, you know, but to be honest, it was weird, though. This is what totally shocked me about this whole thing. It's like, yes, I'm a big fan of Borderlands, but it's like the game only came out a year or so ago. Was it? When did we get Borderlands 2? A year or so ago? It wasn't, you know. It wasn't that long ago. It was a while. I mean, we've had the final bit of DLC just came out today. Which, to be honest, as I don't have my copy of Borderlands anymore, I won't be picking up. But it's weird. It's like, you know, you're putting DLC out, and now you've got a whole new game which is coming out at the end of the year, and it just seems so odd, really, that you want to make a new game, but you can't be asked to make a new game for the new system. I mean, wouldn't you think that it would be a console seller for both systems? I mean, you know, as I say, this is what I got retweeted by, what do you call it, by the subreddit for Borderlands. It's like, well, we have... sorry, I'm trying to chase a fly off my microphone. We have this game that everyone loves, and, you know, Borderlands sold shit tons. It's a really good game. Everyone loves it. It's, you know, it's your basic loot drop. I mean, it, you know, basically it's the cartoon version of what Destiny's going to be when it comes out in a few months. Maybe that's it. Maybe they were worried about having to compete against Destiny, the open world shoot 'em up with loot drops, which is basically Borderlands but with cartoony graphics. But I don't know. I mean, it does bring up a whole varied of, amount of questions about why we haven't got this and why we haven't got that and why they're actually doing this and what the actual motives behind it are, if they're just bullshitting with this, you know, because of the lack of install for the current-gen consoles, even though the fact, to be honest, it's, what is it, we're halfway through April and we only got the new consoles, was it October, November time, and, you know, what do you expect after about 6 months? 6 months. It's like, you know... There's not going to be as many Xbox One sold and PlayStation 4 sold compared to games that you sold with Borderlands 2, considering the fact that Borderlands 2 came out, what, 7-8 years into the console's life cycle for the Xbox 360 and the PlayStation 3. So, yeah, you know, whatever. But I'll carry on. Pitchford isn't wrong. From a business sense, he's likely... making the right short-term decision for Gearbox and 2K, creating the product that will bring the largest return. The audience for Borderlands exists on last-gen, and a Borderlands game exclusively on next-gen systems wouldn't do as well as one that lands on the PlayStation 3, Xbox 360, and a PC. That's all true. Yes, that is, but the fact that, as I said, it was 6 months into a console life cycle, and the fact that, well, as I said, the game came out so close to, I mean, you know, to what we got from Borderlands. I mean, I'll look it up later because I can't multitask and talk at the same time. But I want to try and look up the dates later of, you know, when Borderlands 1 came out, when 2 came out, and compared to how this is. I mean, I think there was a big time gap between Borderlands 1 and 2. Because I think I actually picked up Borderlands, the first Borderlands, a bit later after it came out anyway. But I'll look it up later anyway. You know, I'll post it up on the Facebook page. But it's also a move that could hurt the industry more than it could help Gearbox. Next gen, what do you want to say? I mean, with what Gearbox are doing with the fucking fixing broken games or trying to fix broken games, like, you know, Duke Nukem and that Aliens game. Was it Aliens Colonial Marines? Whatever the fuck that one was we got that people didn't like. If developers make awesome stuff that you can only play on the Xbox One and PlayStation 4, people will buy the Xbox One and PlayStation 4. And if developers continue to make games for the Xbox 360 and PlayStation 3, gamers will still play them on the hardware they already own. Of course, that's the thing. That's why I only picked up I'm sort of glad I did this. This is why I picked up Thief on my my PlayStation 3, because you know what it is available on you know the next gen systems, the you know PlayStation 4s and Xbox Ones. But it's like I didn't see the point in spending you know so much money on a console for a game where I can already get on on previous gens. I mean, I was going to say the same thing for Watch Dogs, but to be honest, I think I see Watch Dogs as a next-gen game rather than a new current-gen game. It's weird trying to say this shit. But, you know, it is a PlayStation 4 game and an Xbox One game. I don't really see it as an Xbox 360 game or a PlayStation 3 game. I see it as, you know, new hardware. You know, and in fact, you know, I've read articles about Ubisoft bitching the fact that they can't get, they want all this tech for their systems, but you know, they want sorry, not tech for the system. They want to make these new games for newer tech, but you know, now they do it, and you know, I might as well just sort of, you know, humour them by buying it on the next gen system. But I mean, you know, the same thing we said for fucking Titanfall. I mean, that is a next-gen game, you know, that has been made for the previous-gen consoles. Excuse me. But, you know, from what I'm hearing, that Titanfall runs perfectly fine on the 360 anyway. But, I mean, I am looking forward to playing that when I do eventually pick it up on whatever system I do intend to pick it up on. But I have no intention of picking it up at the moment because, well, there's so many other stuff I need to play and finish and, you know, other stuff I need to do. Getting people to fork out oh God, what the hell's wrong with me? Must be dying again. Getting people to fork down $400 to $500 a piece. On a piece of new hardware is already a tough sell, and it's all the harder when it doesn't do anything that your current system can't. Exactly. But if every developer waits for every other developer to carry next gen hardware to success, there's a chance the day may never come. Yeah. So basically. They're basically everyone's trying to put their toe in the water, but everyone's waiting for each other person to put their toe in the water first. But you know, whatever. Just that's the thing. You got to, you know, spend money to make money, and you might as well just do it to get it over with. As you know, be the flagship for people to make games for next gen console. I mean, they're here, and you know. People like Ubisoft, they bitch and moan about this sort of shit. Now you have Gearbox who are like, well, just do it, you know, for fuck's sake, just get on with it. Take the 3DS for example. After its shaky launch, left far too few systems in far too few hands. Several games were pushed back in hopes that they'd be released when the hardware was more successful, including both Crush 3D and Shinobi. The lack of content hurt the hardware even more, forcing Nintendo to slash the price in a last-ditch effort to save the handheld. It worked out in the end, but I'm not sure that's a game of chicken worth repeating. Pitchford also ignoring games like Assassin's Creed and Call of Duty Ghost, both of which succeeded in providing strong next-gen experience, while I'm sort of glad they didn't actually bring up Battlefield, because that would have made me laugh, while still releasing last-gen versions. If Gearbox is making a PC version, it's going to take advantage of the powerful PC hardware. It's already making a game that will outpace the power of the Xbox 360 and PlayStation 3. Why not release that version on the next-gen consoles? Sure, it might look like as good as it could if it was next-gen only, and it's not as cheap as developing it was as a last-gen hurrah, but it's but it will at least contribute to the success of next gen, and that's the kind of success that needs some health and the industry. Yeah, basically, as I said, people put their toe in the water. It's like, well, you know, you need to make this shit, otherwise people aren't going to play it, and that's the main problem. You need to make these next gen games for next gen systems. I mean, just maybe. Maybe Nintendo could learn something about, you know, next gen systems and consoles and a whole bunch of other stuff. But yeah, I'll go into some Assassin's Creed news here I got from CBG. New Assassin's Creed game could be based in ancient Rome. Ubisoft Toronto's boss Jade Raymond mentions working on the setting with historians. A new Assassin's Creed game could take place in ancient Rome. A comment by Ubisoft, you know, blah, blah, blah. Asked to explain the series commercial success since debut in 2007. Wow, it's only been 2007. Shit. Was that seven years? Yeah, 7 years and seven games. Raymond, who produced the original game while at Ubisoft Montreal, told The Grid, I think the key to a popular game is a core fantasy. It's a good core fantasy. In Assassin's Creed, there is the obvious part, who doesn't want to be a badass assassin? But then there's the additional element of getting to relive and play a role in these pivotal moments in history. We work with historians to recreate societies like ancient Rome, the French Revolution, which we're getting the new one in, and because each game is crafted in a new era, players don't get tired of it. Yeah, but the thing is, though, what happens when you run out of era and you've still got your story to tell because you've been dragging your feet? That's just me talking. While Ubisoft is only officially working on one new entry in the series, the French Revolution-based Assassin's Creed Unity for the Xbox One and PlayStation 4, it has been rumoured last year that a separate Assassin's Creed game is in development for the Xbox 360 and PlayStation 3. See, that makes me laugh now. And what I talked about just now with Borderlands, you know, Ubisoft is doing the same thing because maybe they're scared. But the thing is, though, they're not really scared. They're doing something, really. They're making a game for the next-gen systems, which is Unity, but they're also making something for the last-gen system, which will be, if this ancient Rome game is true, then that is what we're getting. But we have to wait and see. But I'll carry on reading this article. Oh, if I can click on the right fucking button. I'll carry on reading this article. In December 2013, Examiner claimed Ubisoft is working on two new Assassin's Creed titles for the release in 2014. The report was backed up by Kotaku in March 2014 when the site leaked the first details about the Assassin's Creed Unity ahead of its official announcement, forcing Ubisoft's hand. The site claims the second game, Assassin's Creed Comet, will let players sail the Atlantic, among other features. I mean, it's just, I like the sailing games. I mean, I love the sailing in Assassin's Creed 3 and Assassin's Creed Black Flag. The sailing was fun, but I'm ready for more land, and basically what we're getting with Assassin's Creed Unity is doing it for me. It looks great. I mean, I've seen like street levels and pictures and screenshots and all sorts of stuff, and it does look really, really good. Raymond said last March that Ubisoft Toronto developers had begun collaborating with Ubisoft Montreal on the follow-up to October 20, to Black Flag. While Ubisoft Montreal is the main custodian of the series, Assassin's Creed development is spread across multiple studios. Ubisoft's Annecy, Sophia, and Milan Studios have collaborated on the franchise, to name a few. Separate entries in the series have been covered: The Third Crusade, The Third Crusade. The Renaissance, 16th century Rome, featuring Assassin's Creed 2 and the Brotherhood, and the most recent colonial era. The rise of Caesar's empire in ancient Rome was one of those historic periods mentioned as a possible Assassin's Creed backdrop in a supposedly Ubisoft survey disputed in 2011. Other periods noted in this were medieval China, feudal Japan, Victorian England, which would be great. I'd love to do something, the ye olde England. And American Revolution, which provided, first Assassin's Creed 3. Yeah, I mean, I'd love a new, something that's, I don't know, I mean as you state there, we've got medieval China, we've got feudal Japan, and Victorian England. There's three different eras there, and that's three more games. And we're getting, revolutionary France, and they talk about ancient Rome, so that's five. So we've got, locations for the next five games? You've got to be able to, I mean, that's like, I'm wondering now. I'm like, well, will I keep playing these games year after year after year for different locations? But I mean, it's weird for me to think to question, because I mean, Desmond's dead, as we all know. It's no big spoiler. We all know he's dead now. But it's like, and with the Black Flag, you just played as a random person who, you walked around the whole. What the hell's the studio called? Abstergo Labs, you know, as first person, and you know that was how you played the game until you actually got into the Animus and started, you know, living the memories and doing bits and pieces. But it's like, well, what are we going to do? Is there going to be a main focus on a new character? I mean, because to be honest, it's nice to have all these different locations, but you've got to wrap up the story because the story can go on and on and on, but you're just dragging it out and you're basically just watering down the main product, which we don't want. I mean, I'm a big fan of Assassin's Creed. I know, you know, Zodical Candy and Infected Crow from Eligible Monster. They're big fans of Assassin's Creed. I mean, I know Crow's like one of the biggest Assassin's Creed fans you'll ever find. But it's like, we need to finish the story. You need to wrap shit up. You need to move on. You need to make new games. You need to make new IPs. It's like, you know, you want the new, you know, as is Ubisoft, they said they want the new tech to make new games. Make these new games. Finish Assassin's Creed off. Get it done. Get it sorted. End it. And then come up with something different. You know, I mean, I just think about like Epic Games, you know, what they're doing with whatever the hell there is that they're making. But I don't know. I mean, you know, let's move on. Let's find something else to talk about for a bit. Okay, what have we got? Let's have a look. Oh, here we go. This is probably something for me to shout about. This is from CVG. EA plans on to get more involved in esports. That great thing which people care about, sort of. You know, if you're into it, you're into it. If you're not, then, you know, you don't care. oh, God. It's something you're going to see more from us, says Andrew Wilson, CEO of EA. He says, I actually think it's going to continue to grow, the executive told Red Bull. I'm not fucking tell Red Bull. Here we go. Yeah. When we've just come off franchise reviews, I looked at a number of properties that certainly have an esports focus to it. As a company, we believe that there is something that's going to continue to grow. We have some ready-made franchises for this in our sports properties, but we also have a number of other franchises that may not typically think about an esports opportunities. But we think there might be an opportunity for in the future, so it's something that you're going to see more from us. Another number of other publishers and developers already embrace the esports community. Activision continue to add esports features to games like Call of Duty Ghost, while Blizzard regularly hosts regional global tournaments for StarCraft, Warcraft 3, and World of Warcraft Arena. Earlier this year, Riot Games Vice President for Esports stated that League of Legends should last decades thanks to its esports following. Comparing it to baseball, but I don't. It's weird, right? I'm gonna be frank and open. I mean, I have no love for esports, and as for this show, I am all over the forums and over different Facebook pages and groups, and I'm talking to various other people about their views on esports. I don't know where the hell they're getting their numbers. I mean, yes, League of Legends has a great big massive following in Asia. And, I mean, I've seen stadiums filled with people, like, you know, tens of thousands of people watching people play fucking League of Legends. It's unbelievable to me. I mean, just, yes, I know it's a bit hypocritical for me. You know, I play Pokemon, not professionally. I mean, I'm going to the national tournament, but to be honest, I don't do it to go to, you know, I have no interest in winning the tournament to go to America. I mean, I'm going there to hang out with my mates, you know, the people from Pokemonia and Kelly from what the hell is he on? Strighton Radio and the Looker Bureau. He's moving to Ireland probably today, I think. But yeah, I mean, you know, I'm gonna hang around with him for a good few hours, and that's it. I'm gonna have fun. I'm gonna do what I can. If I win, then I win, which probably won't happen to be honest. But I'm going to have fun. That's the whole point. That's the whole point. We would play games. We play to have fun. It's not. I mean. As I say, I'm a big fan of the Ultimate Sidemen. I'm not sure if he's an official one, but you know, Harry, one of the guys in one of the videos, you know, he's got his own YouTube channel, and I was watching him do a match playing FIFA on the PlayStation 4 with JJ, not our JJ, but Jamal, you know, KSI, and it was like he lost and started going ape shit, and you know, he sort of, you know. Yo, I rage quit, and I mean, I've broken a TV and thrown controllers and, you know, stuff like that.
But it's like, it was, I mean, you know, I've only done, like, through one controller once and it accidentally bounced and smashed my TV. That was basically it. That's all I've really done, sort of rage-wise. But it's like, you know, he picked up a chair and started smashing it up against, this is when he lost. He picked up a chair, started smashing it on the ground, smashed it against the wall, then threw it against his wardrobe and broke his wardrobe. It's like, it's only, it's only a game of football. It's like, there's nothing on this. There's no betting or anything. It's like, you know, it's just a game. You can't really take stuff too seriously. I mean, sporting stuff wise, I'm not talking about, you know, me smashing my TV because I pissed off with Assassin's Creed. It's like, you know, it's at the end of the day, it means nothing. And, you know, I don't know. But so that's the thing. I don't get the whole love of esports. And I'm not seeing the great big love of esports apart from your League of Legends stuff and your Dota 2. That's about all I'm seeing, to be honest. There's nothing I'm actually seeing from people that, I don't know. It just confuses me, that's all. Let's move on. This is from CVG as well. Sorry if I can just get the fucking ads to stop popping up. Yeah, Capcom building new R&D facilities for £47 million. Japanese buildings will house state-of-the-art development tools. Capcom is constructing two new research and development buildings in Osaka, Japan, at a total cost of approximately 8 billion yen, which is 470 million or 79 million dollars. Construction of the first building, provide provisional name R&D Building S, began in May 2013 and is expected to be completed by January 2015 at the cost of 2.5 billion yen. It will feature a floor area of 2,055 square meters set across 8 stories and 1 underground level, mainly probably due to for parking. The second larger building, provisional name R&D Building N, will boast 11,000 square meters floor space across 16 stories and 2 underground levels, mainly for parking. Construction began this month and is expected to be completed in 2016, a cost of 5.5 billion yen. Capcom told investors said the two R&D buildings will have a variety of latest facilities. Examples include a motion capture room, a studio for producing and recording sound effects. So it's not really an R&D, it's basically just for editing and developing. A multi-purpose space that can hold more than... it's basically a new studio. 100 people. Yeah, two buildings will enable Capcom to utilize its outstanding game development skills even more effectively, so we can get better Street Fighter games. Capcom is determined to use new facilities to create highly original games that can meet the expectation of users. In March, Capcom halved its annual net profit forecast, although it cited the weakness that expected the weaker than expected performance of its mobile content business as the main factor. It also mentioned a special loss of approximately 5 billion yen, which was categorized as business structural improvement expenses. In January, Capcom CEO Kenzo Tsujimoto detailed a 5-year plan to comprehensively review software and development in at the company, which includes a pledge to hire 100 new developers every year until 2020, which is nice, I guess. But it's like, well, I don't get, you know, it makes me wonder. I mean, because is this understandable if you look at it deeper? You know, we have the new consoles, it takes a lot of money and staff and to make new games and bits and pieces, you know, the development and all that sort of stuff. I mean, it makes me wonder, though, are we going to get this with other companies? Are we, you know, is this a thing that we're going to see with, what the hell is it? Oh, God. Are we going to see, you know, is Activision going to have their own studios and EA got, you know, I mean, just they're all working on new bits and pieces and, I don't know, just to make sort of the next-gen games easier to make. And I mean, we always have, like, studios making their own engines, which will be, you know... I mean, how many games of the last generation did you play with the Unreal Engine? You know, hundreds of games you played. But, yeah, I'm sort of... looking forward to seeing what they're doing, to be honest. But I mean, I'm still waiting on the Tekken Cross Street Fighter game that we were supposed to be getting, but fuck knows if that's ever going to be made now or whenever that's going to come out. Where was this thing I was looking for? It was about Games with Gold. Where is that one I was looking for? God, I can't even find the bloody thing. I wouldn't delete it. Oh, here we go. Yeah, sorry. Yeah, Hitman Absolution and Deadlight join Games with Gold. I will put this on the Facebook page later because I think it runs out. Oh, here we go. Yeah, it runs out tomorrow, so I've got to do it tonight. Xbox Live Gold subscribers receive free access to the games in April. Hitman Absolution and Deadlight will be free to download in April for all Xbox Live Gold members. Microsoft announced on Xbox Wire that the assassination game from IO Interactive and Square Enix will be free from the 1st of April through the 16th, so you've got until tomorrow to pick it up. Released in November 2012, Hitman Absolution... Was it really 2012? Shit, has the game been out that long? Hitman Absolution is usually priced at £15 or $20 on the Xbox Live Game Store. CVG's Hitman Revolution, Hitman Absolution review concluded that it feels like a proper Hitman mixed with new ideas of varying quality. Crucially, it's great fun and you'll want to play Hitman Absolution more than once. Yes, which I did. Blah, 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 blah. So, yeah, here we are. Survival horror side scroller Deadlight will be available from 16th through the 30th. Normally costs £12 and or $15 on the Xbox Game Store. In our I'm just wondering now. In our Deadlight review, we said the Xbox Live Arcade title was not smart or precise enough to be a puzzle platformer, but as a cinematic one. It's unrivaled. Announced at E3 in 2013. Games with Gold gives Xbox. Oh, they just explained whatever it is. Yeah, no. Deadlight. I think I've already got that. I might have. I think I might have completed that. I think that was the one where basically it was like there was stuff going on in the background as you were sort of running around the foregrounds. If I haven't, then I'll pick it up definitely. I need to download Hitman Absolution. I didn't realize it was that. This big game's been out that long. I'll download that so I can sell my copy, and I'll be happy. But yeah, I mean, Hitman Absolution, it's a really good game. Pick it up, people. I'm surprised a game came out so soon, literally a year and up, just under a year and a quarter. It's been out. Yeah, it was a year and 6 months, and it's like they're already putting it out for free. It seems kind of weird, to be honest, with what they're doing, but. Whatever, to each their own. Here we go. Yeah, this is something from the PlayStation. The Last of Us on this is from Games Radar, by the way. Last of Us. If I can just scroll down the page properly. There we go. The Last of Us on the PlayStation 4 is great news, but does it confirm a sequel? The Last of Us confirmed reappearance as a tooled up, extra pretty 1080p PlayStation 4 game is undoubtedly a good thing. Yes, we already find ourselves awash with a mighty maelstrom of moans, a blithering howl, a boo and rehash and from that sector of the internet. And that inexplicably equates blind cynicism with expectations of intelligence. Realistically, there is nothing about this situation. In fact, a little forethought, it becomes clear that The Last of Us next-gen appearance is a probable harbinger of very good things for the future. I mean, I'm actually tempted to pick this up. I have to admit, I am tempted to pick this up and see what it's like. I've played it already and I know the ending and I might pick it up. I mean, if I can get it really, really cheap, I'll wait a while, but I don't know. I'll think about it. What the hell is it with these bloody insects? Sorry, I was just trying to have a sip from my drink, and there's a moth in it for some reason. Whining. Isn't only silly. It's a complete. It's completely misplaced. While yes, I can understand general knee jerks to the ongoing next gen re-release of the recent games. Given how thick and fast such things have been announced over the last few months. The Last of Us is a game with very particular, set of circumstances. It's barnstormingly good, generally powerful, important even, which arrived at its host hardware way. I'm sorry about it. Its host hardware was on the way out. It's a platform exclusive as such, arriving on only one format in the run-up for a general generation handover. The whole bunch of players will have missed out on it. But yeah, I mean, yes, you can say they have missed out on it, to be honest, but you think that the fact that the PlayStation 4, when it went out, sold more copies than the Xbox 360 did. The Xbox One did when it launched. So you've got to imagine that there are people who bought an Xbox 360 who didn't have a PlayStation 3 who bought a PlayStation 4. Now, this is a great thing for them. I mean, just if you're one of those people and listening to me right now, I recommend you go and play The Last of Us. It is a very, very powerful game. I mean, probably should have been my game of the year last year, but I just sort of had more fun with Assassin's Creed Black Flag, to be honest. But, I mean, the story is one of the most powerful stories I've ever played. And it's right up there story-wise with Far Cry 3. And, you know, I probably will pick it up, but I'm just going to wait till it goes down in price first. Because I say, as it is on a next-gen system, and the price is going to be slightly more than what I paid for it on my PlayStation 3. So I'm like, well, fuck, I'll wait for it to come down in price before I even bother trying to do anything with it. But yeah, I mean, it is a game worth picking up eventually. But I say here we go. Yeah, the real point is, the exciting one is that the re-release really means for the future. You can suspected that a PlayStation 4 version of The Last of Us was on the cards a few months ago. Moreover, I saw it as a part of a more interesting, bigger picture. I see no real reason to swing away from that hypothesis now. This is the writer talking about this. This is, my thinking is The Last of Us 2 is coming to PlayStation 4. Probably always has been. If we get anyone, it will definitely be on the PlayStation 4. You see the structure. It would probably still be console exclusives. What I can't really see The Last of Us, Last of Us 2 being coming to the Xbox Xbox One. I don't think it will. So you see the structure, pacing of the series. Releases makes me feel that that's been the plan for a long time. The first game's launch window was an odd one, to say the least. Generally, new games usually come with new consoles, not outgoing ones, and having been a one-franchise studio for decades, Naughty Dog's development of The Last of Us alongside Uncharted 3 makes things even more unusual. Then consider the several 7 months wait for The Last of Us... for the Left Behind add-on, slightly odd in this... Age of Day One DLC Day One DLC is bullshit. It's all stuff that's on the disc already, and you're just buying an unlock code. It's not exactly like, oh, they have this stuff that they've kept to one side, and you buy it to download it. No, you just basically get an unlock code. That's all it is. And rapid fire expansions are made ready for capitalization on big hits fast. Doubly so when you consider that this was. This wait took us right through to the PlayStation 4's launch window. But yeah, this is going on a bunch of bullshit here. It's like, wow, there's too much stuff for me to give a shit about in this article. But yeah, I mean, you understand what they're saying. It's are we getting one? The same arguments were basically when this same sort of arguments were made when we got the HD version of Beyond Good and Evil. It was like, well, we've got this. We definitely must be getting Beyond Good and Evil 2. We must be getting Beyond. From what I've seen, we are getting Beyond Good and Evil 2. But I'm not going to be one to play it. Here we go. Here we go. Something from Nintendo. There's surprised to see stuff on Nintendo, but I found something and it's worth reading. This is from CVG. Nintendo cuts US prices on 5 3DS games. $30 for Mario Kart 7, Super Mario Land 3D, and others. Nintendo of America will permanently cut the prices of five 3DS games, the firm announced Monday. I mean, this article came out yesterday. Mario Kart 7, Super Mario 3D Land, New Super Mario Bros. 2, Animal Crossing New Leaf, and Donkey Kong Country Returns 3D will now be available at retail on the Nintendo eShop for just under $30. I mean, not sure, so I've got three out of these five. I've had three out of these five. I mean, I had New Super Mario Bros. I think I sold it a little while ago. Animal Crossing New Leaf, I sold that. And I do have Donkey Kong Country Returns 3D, but I'm not really playing it. I might sell that in the future as well. But the first three games are also the system's three best-selling games in the US. Each has sold more than 2.15 million physical digital units combined. The standard price of a new 3DS title is $40 at retail and on the eShop. I mean, just as I say, I've talked about this before. I'm probably sick to you're probably all sick to death of hearing this from me. But it's like, yeah, the downloadable prices are fucking too expensive. To be honest, it's like, yeah, it's like you want us to buy this stuff, but you're charging an arm and a leg for no decent reason. Nintendo announced in January that 3DS sales had topped 11.5 million million units across the US, including 3DS, 3DS XL, and 2DS. Basically. Yeah, basically, it's not bad. 11.5 million units for, was it three different systems, which are basically the same thing. I mean, you know, I've got my 3DS XL and a 2DS, so, you know, I mean, well, don't add to those numbers because that's just for the US. But this is more than 16 million combined package and digital 3DS games were sold across, sold in 2013 in an increase of more than 45% over 2012's total, according to Nintendo of America. Nintendo's 3DS is a powerhouse with games and experience that appeal to all kinds of players, says Scott Moffitt, Nintendo of America's Executive Vice President of Sales and Marketing. He says, we're not slowing down in 2014 with more games, feature fan favorite franchises on the way. The best days of Nintendo 3DS are still to come. Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, yeah, before Christmas, we had Pokemon come out, which is a big seller. As I said, you know, Mario, we've got Smash Brothers. I mean, there's only about a dozen or so actual games that Nintendo puts out with characters. And I've gone through this like little rant before. It's like, you know, you have your Zeldas, you have your Metroids, you have your Donkey Kongs, you have your Marios, you have your Luigis, you have your Warios. You know, there's only so many, you know, Kirby and, you know, Samus in Metroid. It's like, you only have a certain amount of games that you can play that basically come from Nintendo that people want to play. I mean, apart from that, they don't really have anything. I mean, I remember when I was standing in line for 3 hours trying to play 5 minutes of Pokemon X and Y at the Eurogamer Expo last year. It's like, it was good. There was like stuff that we could play and, you know, sort of watching on the big screens, they were showing off different games. There was, I mean, there's a bunch of stuff that I do want to play. I just haven't had the chance to pick it up, and I just sort of don't really want to be honest. I mean, there's one, I can't remember what the hell was it? Shit, I can't remember, was it some sort of Steam Dig something? It was some sort of, you played some robot, and it was sort of like, you were digging underground to find different bits and pieces and sort of puzzle games. And there was one where you played some sort of woman who looked like Jasmine from, you know, from Aladdin. But yeah, I mean, there's good stuff. I mean, sure, you know, don't get me wrong. There is good stuff, but it's just, well, it's just a bit, I don't know. It's the same old shit from Nintendo. That's my problem, I think. But we'll see what we get. Let's try and find something else. What we've got here. There we go. Yes. Something I'm looking forward to very much, as I said about. Which, you know, as you lot all should be playing, and probably, this probably explains the game better than I probably could when I did it earlier. Trials Fusions is 1080p on PlayStation 4 and 900p on Xbox One. Game runs at 60 frames per second on all platforms. Day one patch also detailed. Ubisoft has confirmed that the PC and PlayStation 4 versions of Trials Fusions will run at in native 1080p, while the Xbox One edition will run at 900p following a day one patch. The Xbox 360 version of Trials Fusions will run in a native 600p, like all leading games on the platform. With each version of the game running at a constant 60 frames per second, the publisher told B10.com. So I'm excited. I mean, I'm hopefully excited because I'm wondering about the TV, my new TV. Because, I mean, when I turn my PlayStation 4 on, my PlayStation 3 on, a little message pops up and saying about running at 1080p. I'm like, well, great. Hopefully with this new stuff, I will have to, it will be running at that sort of speed anyway. The site reports that the day one Trials Fusion patch will increase the resolution of the Xbox One version from 800p to 900p while improving the PlayStation 4's frame rates. Further fixes focus on track, leaderboard, and replay issues. The Trials Fusion release date is April 16th, tomorrow, on Xbox One, Xbox 360, and PlayStation 4. And April 24th on the PC. Fusion is the first game in the series to appear on a Sony console. Oh, didn't it come out on a thingy? Oh, I thought it did. So basically, all you PlayStation fans are getting something. And I say, pick up Trials. It's definitely worth it. This is something I'm just checking now. This is something I'll have to check. The digital download will cost under £16, while the physical version, including the game and a season pass, will be available from April 17th. The season pass will be available separately for $15.99, offering access to 6 post-launch DLC packs containing new tracks, bike parts, rider gear, and items. CVG's recent Trials Fusion preview said the game feels necessary and immediate. It feels like a game that can leave its predecessors in the dust, and if you're one of them... Many people become slightly addicted to them. You'll know what a recommendation this is. Yeah. And just, I say, with the Ultimate Sidemen, I'm looking forward to seeing their videos with this game. Hopefully I'll get some videos from them by Sunday. I mean, if they're picking this up tomorrow. Just looking at the price, that explains why it does look like it's costing so much. For the systems. What else have we got? Let's have a look. I'm doing actually well this week. I'm actually getting through all my news articles, trying to find stuff that's that you actually want to listen about. Here we go. Yeah, I'll knock this one out, and that's pretty much done with the Sony stuff. Castle of Illusion joins US Instant Game Collection. Discount across Lego series and more. PlayStation 3's version of Castle of Illusion starring Mickey Mouse is free for US PlayStation Plus members starting this week. This came out yesterday. This article came out yesterday, so it's brand new news. The new Castle of Illusions is a reimagining... what the fuck? Bloody things. There we go. Yep, sorry. It's a reimagining of the Sega Genesis Mega Drive classic, adding 3D visuals and enhanced sound and gameplay to the previous 2D 16-bit platformer. Those who download the game before April 28th will also receive the Castle Illusions Sega Genesis bundle, which includes the original version of the game, that's cool, and a Miserable Dynamic theme. Oh, pretty sweet. I am so looking forward to getting my PlayStation 4, and I'll probably pick this up. Well, it'd be too late for me, to be honest, but I probably will pick it up anyway. The game was released digitally for PlayStation 3, Xbox 360, and PC earlier in September, costing just about £10. €13 and $15. There's a whole bunch of discounts and stuff they're going on about here. Lego ones are sort of half price. Yeah, it's too much for me to mention. We've got Pure Chess, the whole different bundle packs for that. You've got Teenage... it's just character packs and stuff. There's nothing really of worth in that to mention, so I will move on. So literally I am running out of time as usual. Yes, this is something from Microsoft. This is something I wanted to talk about. Microsoft promises its E3 conference will focus heavily on games. This is about a month old, this story, but it's something I saw before I came back, and I was like, I need to talk about this. I do plan on doing a E3 prediction show from what we might see, and it will be quite fun. I'll probably do this like the week or two before the E3 show. Before E3's, it'd be the week before. Otherwise, when E3's happening, I'll be talking about stuff anyway. We're already Hang on, sorry. We're already over our 90-minute time limit and having to move stuff out of show. The big hullabaloo of E3 draws nearer and nearer as everyone eagerly awaits another year's worth of announcements for the big events. We're starting to get some ideas of Microsoft presence at the annual expo. Good old Phil Spencer has been chatting on Twitter, as spotted by CVG, and he answered a question that directed to him about a conference. About the conference by confirming that. What's he say? Yeah, here we are. That this year's Microsoft showing will be more game focused with very few execs. Because, if you remember last year, it was like executive after executive. It was like, just show us your fucking games, basically. That's all we were after. I was following this conference live on Twitter as well because I was sort of watching the thing as it was going on. And it's like, yeah, it's like nice to see all these people, but it's like, show us the bloody games. Don't bore us down with stats and figures. And no one gives a shit. It's E3. It's not the GDC. You can tell us all your stats and figures there when it's all the developers and stuff. But when it's like me and general members of the public and, you know, people who are going to buy your shit, you need to tell us about the games. Phil also mentions that we've already had so much stuff that Microsoft has planned to move stuff out of their 90-minute slot during the show. This is from Richard J. Walken. Will this year's E3 conference, this is the Twitter conversation, will be as game-focused as last year's? Phil Spencer says, yes, I think you'll see very few execs. We're already over... Yeah, basically just the bullshit I've just read. But it's quite funny. I was looking at this Phil Spencer's Twitter icon. It's like, yeah, he's got the original Xbox logo. So I was like, well, shit, you should be updating that, son. Phil's also speaking a little more at GDC after his earlier comments about... about the VR Oculus Rift. But yeah, I mean, we've had GDC and it's all... Nothing really interesting came out of it. Let's find something else. I'm still plenty more articles. I love it that I'm getting through all this so easily. Here we go. It's more, that's the same article from different website. Okay, where is that? I just had it a second ago. I clicked on it. Here we go. Yeah. This is from IGN. Xbox One and Xbox One Japanese exclusive E3 conference plan teased. A unique little exclusive title for Xbox One is going to be released by an awesome Japanese studio. Now, I saw this and this was intrigued me. I didn't bother reading it as I never do because I usually like to, fill my, full, joy or happiness when I'm doing the show. Microsoft is set to reveal one more Japanese Xbox One exclusive. One or more Japanese Xbox exclusives made by a renowned Japanese studio. The company's Phil Spencer spoke to Famitsu via DualShockers to explain that Microsoft is planning some special announcements to coincide with the launch of Xbox One's market. Launch of Xbox One in new markets. He says, I'm very excited to announce that the release window in Japan. A unique exclusive title for Xbox One is going to be released by an awesome Japanese studio, he said before adding, I am looking forward to it to go to Tokyo Game Show this year and I want to show everyone something I've never seen before. Stay tuned. While Tokyo Game Show won't place until September though, the company is currently focusing much more closely on its E3 announcements. It sounds like Microsoft has a lot to show. And it's apparently had to minimise how much stage time I've just read that sort of stuff in the previous article. Yeah, I'm actually wondering what's going to get what they're going to offer and what studio it is. I really think we're going to get a big letdown with what they're going to tell us because it's like, well, yeah, he's happy. It's a big Japanese studio. It's like, okay, but it's going to be like an Xbox-only game, so I don't know. To be honest, I don't really know what he's teasing at, but to be honest, though, is it going to be Dead Rising? Hang on. One, two. What are we on? Dead Rising 3? Dead Rising 4? Is that what it's going to be? I mean, I don't really know, to be honest. But We'll wait and see. I mean, I'm looking forward to E3. I mean, with the new stuff that we have, I mean, I'm looking forward to seeing more Destiny and, you know, everything, to be honest. There's nothing I'm really not looking forward to. Here we go. This is something that sort of made me chuckle. I'll probably just sort of wrap the show off after this. And there's other stuff coming on. I've got bits and pieces to talk about. And I'll just finish on this. Microsoft may reward well-behaved Xbox Live players with gifts. Firm exploring ways to encourage civilized gaming. Microsoft has stated that it's considering rewarding players with gifts for continuing to keep up good reputation online. Speaking at the GDC conference talk for ID Xbox developers, Microsoft partner and developer lead Frank Savage explained that as well as punishing players for bad behavior, the company is looking into making good behavior worthwhile. Stating that Microsoft is aiming to actively encourage players to be better, Savage said the I love this. It's about well behaved and players and better bad behaved players from a guy called Savage. I think that is hilarious. Savage said the Xbox reputation algorithm could be used to give the gift to the players whose reputation is soaring because you're this amazing player that has that everyone wants to be with. That's bullshit. I get no prizes whatsoever. The rewards, which have yet to be determined, will be Microsoft's way of saying thanks for being such a good member of the community. Here's a reward. The Xbox One uses a reputation algorithm which categorizes gamers based on their behavior online. See, I don't get that. While the new reputation system was first announced last July, Microsoft senior product manager Mike Levin explained how players with a bad reputation could be forced to play against each other. Yeah, I mean, this is just a waste of damn time. It's like, and why is Microsoft getting involved? Shouldn't it be the actual developers themselves? Shouldn't it be like Activision or who the fuck is it? Activision and who does this fucking Battlefield? EA. You know, shouldn't it be them who are doing this algorithm? I mean, why should it be built into the console? Just make the fucking. It's all this micromanagement bullshit. It's like, just make the consoles. Don't worry about the games. Let the developers worry about the games. You don't have to do bugger all. But ultimately, if there's a few percent of our population that are causing the reputation of the population to have a miserable time, we should be able to identify these folks. What a waste of time this is. So there'll be very few good things to happen to people that just play their games and are good participants. And you'll start to see some efforts in if you continue to play bad or harass other players. You'll probably end up starting to play with more with other players that are more similar to you. I mean, to be honest, I don't really give a shit when it comes to playing with people. I mean, you know, when I play Call of Duty, I'm like, well, fuck, I don't care. I'm just shooting people. I mean, good, bad behaviour, but we're killing people. That's the whole point of the game. And I don't know, how can you, I think about stuff like FIFA and sports games, like how do you identify bad behaviour? Someone who does like six tackles in a row, like, I don't know. And basically, if they want to do something, this is what we have now with the reputation system. Basically, you can sort of mark someone you played as a good player or a bad player. They already have that, and it's a waste of damn time anyway, because basically someone pisses you off that, and you rage quit, you're going to look up their gamer tag and just fucking go, yep, this person's a pain in the ass, I don't like them, even though they did nothing wrong apart from, I mean, Jones, this has happened to me several times. It's just a waste of damn time. It really is. But so this wraps up the show for another week. So coming up next is Alcohol by Volume, and then we have Unsigned Hype, and after that we have Dutch and Royce with whoever will be hosting it with Royce, because Dutch is in the clink, chewing on a pillow, having his, arsehole spread open. Probably not. But no, as Dutch is getting butt fucked in the showers, someone will need to co-host with Royce tonight. Thanks for everyone for listening. I do appreciate it. If you do want to email the show, it's antisocialgameradio@yahoo.co.uk. You can also join the Facebook group. It's facebook.com/group/MNRGamerLobby. And also, you can like us on Facebook. I'd like some more likes. We're stuck at 90. I'd like to get it over 100 at least. Go to facebook.com/antisocialgamerradio. And also, you can follow us on Twitter at @MLRGamerRadio. So I'm not too sure what my topic for next week is. I don't really know. I have something planned, but I need to put some thought into it, and I will let you know over the next day or two what it's going to be. And but yeah, so, you know, also, you know, if you do want to call into the show, it's, you know, Antisocial Gamer Radio. It's all on Skype. Just, you know, add it in there and, you know, call in and chat with me. What's something you've seen? I mean, I'd love to get some callers in during the E3 show when we do get some announcements. But, you know, there's so much stuff happening for me. And, you know, we've got the live event coming up soon. You know, I'm fucking jetting to America again. I've got my national Pokemon tournament stuff. There's so much stuff happening that I'm just looking forward to. But yeah, I'm going to literally sort of sign out because my voice is going. That's puberty for you. It took about 29 years. But yeah, so I'm going to head off now because I want to get a drink that doesn't have a fly in it. And I will see you lot again next week. Take care, people. Bye-bye.
Actually brought anything to the table?
Well, my God, what a bag of burden that British piece of shit was. Holy shit.
A woman can pilot.
From everyone here at BBC Radio 4, this is Alice Arnold, hoping that you sleep well and wishing you a very good night. Good night.
The area forecast for the next 24 hours. Viking north at Sierra, south at Sierra, south or southwest, or northwest, or northeast, or east. Occasional rain, wintry showers, occasional rain, rain or showers, occasional rain, moderate or poor, becoming moderate.